This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashrin Johan. On the 8th of October, prominent journalists Maria Ressa of Philippines and Dmitry Muratov of Russia were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. This was an endorsement, not just of journalism, but of journalism in a time where freedom of the press have come increasingly under threat. But what does this award actually mean, and why should we care? Joining me on the show to discuss this and frankly just celebrate that journalists won the Nobel Peace Prize is Ding Joanne. She's an advisor at the Center for Independent Journalism. Welcome to the show, Joanne. How are you doing?
Hi, Dashrin. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for coming on the show. I'm really excited to talk to you about this, particularly because something interesting happened with the announcement of this, of the Nobel Peace Prize, right? Because on the same day, on the 8th of October, there was a forum going on, a virtual forum called Press in Distress: Will Independent Journalism Survive in Southeast Asia? And this forum were attended by many people in the region. A couple of my colleagues attended as well. And you were part of the forum as well. And what was interesting is during the forum was when the announcement was made. So the forum, which had Maria Ressa as well, there was a point where I believe this is the stuff that I've been hearing, that, you know, she was receiving calls and all of that, you know, just because at that moment, it was when she herself found out and when the rest of y'all found out as well. So you were one of the first people on the planet to find this news out. What was it like, Joanne, being part of the forum and discovering that prominent journalist Maria Ressa has won the Nobel Prize?
Oh, it was such a celebratory moment. We saw her taking the call and then she was muted, but we could see she was on the call and we could see she was getting quite emotional, actually. And then the moderator, Ian Yi, announced that she had won the Nobel Peace Prize, and we all unmuted ourselves and we gave a really big cheer. We were all so elated. And then she came back on the call and she was, I think, quite emotional at that point. And I'm just so amazed that even after getting such news, she could still compose herself. And the first thing that came out of her mouth was, she said, "This is for all of us."
Wow.
That was just so amazing. She said, "This is for all of us." And she said, "This is a recognition of how hard it is to be a journalist today and keep doing what we do." So she said she hopes that this is a recognition and that we are going to win the battle for truth and the battle for facts. And of course, we all applauded her again. And it was really a wonderful moment. I mean, it was a forum about how the press is under attack, from threats from the government, you know, from the utilization of social media to distort facts. And and to have that happen during that forum was a real boost, I think, for all of us.
All right, let's take a listen to that moment that Joanne was just talking about, that moment in the forum where Maria Ressa found out that she won the Nobel Peace Prize for 2021.
"This is for all of us. Oh my God. You know, I am in shock, but I actually, I think it's a recognition of how tough it is. See, I don't cry. This is, okay, wait, 2 seconds. So this is a recognition of how hard it is to be a journalist today, how hard it is to keep doing what we do, right? So thank you to the Nobel Prize Committee. I share it with a Russian journalist, and it's a recognition of the difficulties, but also hopefully of how we are going to, of how we're going to win the battle for truth, the battle for facts. We hold the line."
So that was Maria Ressa's first acceptance speech of sorts when she found out that she had won the Nobel Peace Prize 2021. If you'd like to check out the full forum, you can head over to Center for Independent Journalism's Facebook page and look for the video titled Press in Distress, Will Independent Journalism Survive in Southeast Asia? All right, Joanne, before we get into what this award means, Joanne, for people who may not know who Maria Ressa is, perhaps you can give us a refresher on the work that she does and why exactly she won the Nobel Prize.
Maria Ressa is a longtime journalist. A lot of people, my parents and myself, will remember her as a CNN journalist. Mm-hmm. And she was an investigative journalist and bureau chief in CNN, based in the Philippines as well as in Jakarta. And in 2012, she established Rappler, which is an online news site in the Philippines. And it's also now a multimedia news website. They also do TV coverage and news coverage and things like that, videos and as well as articles. And she is the executive editor of Rappler. And it is one of Philippines' most independent news sites. And it has published extensive interviews of those affected by Duterte's war on drugs that has resulted in thousands of extrajudicial deaths and vigilante killings. Mm. And they have come under constant attack from the government. So they face, you know, tax evasion cases. And Maria Ressa herself has been personally charged of cyber libel. And she's actually been found guilty for one of the charges, and that is pending appeal. And she has also faced a constant barrage of hate on social media. At one time, she received almost 100 hate messages on Facebook every hour. And these contain death threats, rape threats, threats to her personal safety and well-being, lies about who she is and her and the funding she receives. So, she has been under so much attack, and yet she always says, you know, we will hold the line, and she will keep going, and she's still going at it after even after all this.
Yeah, she's definitely an inspiring figure. But it wasn't just Maria Ressa who got the Nobel Prize, but another prominent journalist as well, Dmitry Muratov, which I brought up in the introduction. He's from Russia. What can you tell me about him?
Well, I also had to go and find out more about him. Mm-hmm. And he is also an incredible inspiration. He is a Russian journalist and the editor-in-chief of a newspaper called Novaya Gazeta, co-founded in 1993. And in fact, Mikhail Gorbachev, who won the 1990 Nobel Peace Prize, so they will win some prize money. It's roughly about $1 million. And so he used some of that money to start up this newspaper. And they have been publishing, you know, all these years. And maybe a more familiar name is Anna Politkovskaya, who was assassinated, a Russian journalist was assassinated. She was also contributing to Novaya Gazeta. So they are an independent newspaper in Russia, which is now rare. And they have published a string of investigative pieces that have exposed corruption and human rights abuses in Chechnya. And from 2000 to 2010, at least six of their journalists and contributors were killed. They were shot, they were poisoned, they were kidnapped and executed. But they have kept going, and Dmitry Muratov has kept going all these years. So again, another inspiration to journalists all over the world.
Certainly. Joanne, why is winning the Nobel Peace Prize important? And what is the significance of the prize being awarded to two journalists, particularly this year in 2021?
The Nobel Prizes are 120 years old, and they are considered one of the most prestigious prizes in the world. The Peace Prize itself is determined by five members appointed by the Norwegian Parliament, and they receive nominations from all over the world, from governments, members of parliament, academics, institutes, and things like that. And they recognize people who have conferred great benefits to humankind. You know, there are other prizes for science and literature. You know, on one hand, it's just a prize. There are many other such prizes in the world. You know, we also win prizes at school, right? And you know, it's nice to get a prize. On the other hand, especially for the Peace Prize, it has become a symbol. So by recognizing certain achievements throughout the decades, it speaks of a belief of where we want the world to go and also where we don't want it to go. So the Nobel Peace Prize has now taken on this symbolic meaning. And journalists have won the Peace Prize before. And when I was reading up, I came across this German journalist, Karl von Ossietzky, who exposed German rearmament. This was after World War I, and they were not supposed to rearm. And he was a constant warning voice against Nazism before the Second World War. And he won the Peace Prize in 1935, and he died a year later in his 40s, I think, because of tuberculosis. He was just imprisoned in concentration camps. And just like Karl Ossietzky won the Peace Prize at a crucial moment in history and was a harbinger of things to come, I mean, bad things. We are also, I think, at a similarly crucial moment in our global history. The things that Maria Ressa and Dmitry Muratov are fighting for democracy, for truth, for media freedom, these, you know, and our responses to what they are telling us, this will make a difference in our future. And it will make a difference even between life and death for many people. So we face multiple threats to our existence as a human race, our very existence, you know, from the climate crisis to a global pandemic. And we face increasingly authoritarian governments all over the world, grasping at power at the expense of people, at the expense of our environment. And we need journalists more than ever to bring information to the people, to hold leaders to account, and to help us navigate this crazy time that we live in. So I think it is a really bold and right move by the Nobel Committee to award this year's Peace Prize to Maria Ressa and Dmitry Muratov, and to recognize the importance of journalists and media freedom in our world today.
On the show with me today is Ding Jo An, advisor at the Center for Independent Journalism. After the break, I'll be asking her about journalism in the digital age. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Ding Jo An, researcher at the Center for Independent Journalism. And we're discussing the recent announcement that Maria Ressa of the Philippines and Dmitry Muratov of Russia have been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. What does that mean for journalism? So, Jo An, during the announcement of the award, the chair of the Norwegian Nobel Committee, he said, and I quote, "They are representative of all journalists in a world in which democracy and freedom of the press face increasingly adverse conditions." You alluded to this already. How is media freedom under threat across the globe?
I would like to quote from a Reporters Sans Frontières, Reporters Without Borders report in 2020, the World Press Freedom Index. And in coming up with that index, they talked about the many crises that journalism is facing today that will determine our very future. I mean, we might not even exist in the next 10 years.
Yikes.
I mean, that's not
that's
what
a scary thought.
That's what I'm saying. But yeah, I mean, when you look at all the crises that they list, I mean, so they talk about a geopolitical crisis. So authoritarian regimes are getting increasingly aggressive. And then there's a democratic crisis. People are getting increasingly polarized, and you know, there are more repressive policies coming into place because of that. Then there's a crisis of trust. People are becoming more suspicious of the media, and some even hate the media. And then there's an economic crisis. Good journalism costs money, and that is becoming increasingly difficult to find. And then we face a technological crisis where the means in which news is being distributed is now primarily through the internet. And the methods in which social companies like Facebook apply their algorithm has resulted in wild and untrue stories getting more traction than fact-based journalistic stories. And then what happens is government use that as an excuse to impose more laws to curb free speech, to prevent, you know, ostensibly to prevent lies from getting out. But ironically, or maybe inevitably, is then used against fact-based journalistic stories and against journalists like Maria Ressa, instead of on the fictitious and harmful violence-inciting stories that are out there. So we are definitely under threat, and that is something that the world will have to contend with.
And is it the same, you know, are the same things happening in Malaysia as well? Are Malaysian journalists and media at large experiencing a lot of what you brought up, you know, that's going on, a lot of what's going on across the globe? I mean, if yes, perhaps you can give some examples on how media freedom has been under threat in Malaysia recently.
Yes, I think media freedom in Malaysia has always been under threat. We operate under a very oppressive regime. So from, you know, the Printing Presses and Publications Act way back in the that was used a lot in the 80s and the 90s, to now Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act, laws that are very broad that can get you into trouble very easily. So on top of what I talked about, the technological crisis and the economic crisis, we do face threats from an increasingly authoritarian regime as well. So, I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of the editor of Code Blue, who was questioned for exposing COVID cases at a vaccination center. That's a very important story. You know, you go for a COVID vaccine, you get COVID. I mean, that's so paradoxical, you know.
Right.
Or for a reporting on an inquiry into a hospital fire in Johor, really, really important stories. She was questioned for that. And Malaysia Kini journalists getting called in for questioning about articles about police brutality. You know, I mean, they said, oh, you're just a witness, but that's a very intimidating act. You write a story, you're just doing your job, you end up having to go to the police station. And then just the climate, you know, think of Heidi Kwa, the refugee rights activist, who has been charged for highlighting conditions at a detention center. So she's also just doing her job. But, you know, I think the message that is being sent is, well, if you get too critical, if you expose things that we don't like, well, we always, you might have to expect having to pay a visit to the police station. Or there were some youth activists that were even arrested, had to spend the night there. So, yeah, so I think definitely Malaysia fits into the global trend of media being under threat. I mean, that's not surprising because governments the world over are under pressure because of COVID and they would be hard-pressed to, they would try really hard to control the narrative, and that's what they're doing here in Malaysia.
With all of that in mind, do you think Malaysian journalists would feel inspired that the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to two journalists? Because while it has happened before, it doesn't happen too often, right?
Yes, I hope that they do. I mean, that moment at the forum when we all kind of shared in the moment with Maria was a really a wonderful moment for all of us on the call. This is global recognition for the work that journalists do. Even the Nobel Committee also said that Maria Ressa and Dmitry Muratov are representatives for all journalists who stand up for this ideal of a world in which, you know, in a world in which democracy and freedom face increasingly adverse conditions. So for journalists in Malaysia, you know, sometimes, I mean, when I was a journalist, and from what I hear, it still happens today, we aren't treated so well. You know, sometimes you go for events and you get shunted into a corner. You know, we get have to sit on the floor. In Parliament now, I think they're stuck in the basement. They're not allowed to come upstairs. And we will get banned from press conference. You get bullied by politicians. And, you know, I hope that this is recognition that although people don't, you know, announce our arrival or give us VIP seats, journalists are important. In fact, you know, just as important or even more important than the so-called VIPs that they are, that they they have to interview, you know, sometimes. And they bring information and facts to a much needed, which is much needed by the public. You know, just think of this pandemic and what we have been through and we are still going through. We could not have gone through this without facts about the virus, about lockdown, about public health responses, about the scene, about how our money is being spent, you know, about who is suffering, who is dying, you know. So it's the same for our political crisis. We need facts and information. What's wrong with our electoral system? How did we get to where we are today? How do we get out of it? So I hope that Malaysian journalists will take heart and that they will, you know, find inspiration in award to journalists.
But sometimes it can be difficult to find inspiration, right? Especially when the climate or the direction of, you know, things are, the way things are heading doesn't necessarily look like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And something else that was touched on during the award announcement was how the digital landscape has also in many ways threatened, and I quote, free, independent and fact-based journalism that serves to protect against abuse of power. How true is this?
Something that is increasingly being talked about now, about how, and Maria Ressa constantly talks about this, and mm-hmm. she has cited that Facebook, you know, as the largest news distributor in the world, is unable to distinguish from fact and fiction. They are promoting stories that are full of hate, that are lies, above stories that are factual. And governments have made use of this. So governments have always tried to control the narrative. And now that narrative has shifted onto social media platforms, WhatsApp, Twitter, Facebook. So, I mean, there are documentaries now on how Facebook was manipulated to elect Donald Trump during the presidential election of 2016 and through targeted ads and social media campaigns. And because we give up so much of our data online when we join these social media platforms like Facebook, you know, they know what we eat, what we like, where we go, where we holiday, who are our friends, what we like to read, what kind of political leaning we are. So it's no longer a blunt tool when they target ads. It's a really sharp, incisive tool that analyzes your patterns and beliefs and hits you right where you are most vulnerable. There was the example that, you know, for new mothers, they get fed anti-vaccine information on their feed, you know, at a time when you're feeling really concerned about your new child and, you know, it's time for vaccinations. And then you get fed all this anti-vaccine information at the same time, because that's what gets traction. That's what people like to read, conspiracy theories and things like that. So when it is difficult to differentiate facts from fiction, then legitimate outfits will suffer, because people find it difficult now to differentiate fact-checked, verified news from misinformation that's spreading on their social media platforms, which is why I said earlier that the very future of journalism is at stake. You know, if people like reading misinformation so much, if it gets so much traction because, you know, they are wild, they are crazy, they gain a lot of likes and shares, it's very sensational, and social media platforms promote this and encourage this, then what is the future then for legitimate fact-based journalism?
On a separate but related note, how have journalists and media companies taken a hit in the digital era in terms of revenue, and what are its consequences? Because there was a time where everyone would spend, you know, R1.50 to buy newspapers every single day. You know, I've seen my parents doing it, my grandparents do it. I think a lot of us grew up in households where we saw our parents and grandparents do it. But it seems like today people aren't willing to pay even, let's say, 55 cents a day for a Malaysia Kini subscription, for example, because what you hear is, you know, what's the point? Got free information on other websites and all these things. So how do you process this? And like, how do you make sense of this?
I think sometimes we are too frugal for our own good, you know. We think that, we, when, you know, maybe as Malaysians, I don't know, when we think we can game the system, hey, I managed to get in free, you know, or hey, I bought a cheapest ticket, but I managed to go to the VIP section. Then we feel that that is a something that is to be celebrated, instead of maybe being more aware of the concept that, hey, good things cost money and we should pay for it, you know, if the time and effort and cost has been spent. So it's also a mindset issue. So I hope people understand that, you know, and this is something that people need to understand more and more, that good journalism costs money. And there is a difference between reading news on a website like Malaysia Kini and reading the stuff that your friend sends you on WhatsApp that says that, you know, boiled garlic water can cure corona. They're different because the stuff that you read on Malaysia Kini has been verified. They've actually hired a journalist to check the facts and verify them, and in some cases go on the ground, you know, in many cases, and verify that this has happened. And it goes through several eyes. People always don't realize this. When a news article appears on a website, it has probably gone through 2, 3, sometimes 4 eyes. The journalist and the sub-editor and the who checks for facts again and for grammatical errors, and the editor who signs off on the pages for the day. So they do their due diligence to ensure that it's as accurate as it can be. And the kind of investigative journalism, so like 1MDB scandal, you know, Scorpion submarines, or where have COVID cases been found? You know, these all require verification and investigation, and that costs money. So if we want to be able to read verified facts that we can, you know, trust that they have done their best, that it is true and factual, then we must be prepared to pay for it and not do this like, hoo-hoo, again, the system kind of Asian, I don't know, Malaysian thing.
Yeah, totally. But the thing is, right, Joanne, you are bringing up excellent points, definitely. You know, and it's things that we have discussed, you know, I mean, as an industry, we have discussed, you know, many times, many, many times, you know, over the past few years and all of that. But do you think people care? Do you think people care about verified information and, you know, all these sorts of things? Because it's... I wonder if people don't know that they're consuming information that is not verified, or they just simply do not care. Because, you know, like I've even spoken to, you know, personal friends of mine, and they will say like if anything you can, because I'm working in the industry, they'll be like, if anything you can tell us if it's you know, if it's wrong or something, like why should we, you know, subscribe and all of that. So how do you process this?
I think people don't care in a sense that if you ask them, like, do you care about, you know, replacing the first past the post system with a mixed member proportional system, which will guarantee greater democracy and better representation in Malaysia. If you ask them like that, then they say, no, I don't care. But do you care that you're, you know, you are not able to feed your children because, you know, there has been leakages in the system that has resulted in a lack of a, you know, well, proper welfare system that can now, you know, feed you know what I mean? Like when the actual consequences come upon them, then they care, lah. So they might not care with the principle of, you know, factual verified news as a lofty concept, but you would care when you don't have the information to decide whether to wear a mask or not, whether to go out or not, you know, during COVID times. These are life and death decisions, and these have resulted in deaths, actual deaths in the world, when people don't have factually verified information about treating COVID and how to prevent COVID, leading to many people dying unnecessarily, or about the vaccine, for example. So there are certain things, maybe people may not care per se about the big lofty principle, but they definitely care about the results. And this is an area perhaps for publicly funded media. And we have to explore ways in which that would happen, so that the public also have kind of an example of what good journalism is.
Mm.
And something that they can compare it to, so you know, so that they know, like, oh, okay, so this kind of journalism is factual journalism, and the, you know, garlic water can cure coronavirus. It's not, you know. Maybe they need examples and modeling for them to be able to make comparisons.
Certainly. All right. As we wrap this conversation up, Joanne, final thoughts. Why is journalism important and where do we go from here?
I'm going to quote Maria Ressa a lot in my response. So she has said that press freedom is not just about journalists. Mm. It is the foundation of every single right of every person to the truth, so that we can hold power to account. So there's a lot of abuse of power going on all over the world, weaponization of the law, you know, to repress, silence dissenters, that's normal. And Maria Ressa has spoken of, you know, death by a thousand cuts to democracy.
Mm.
So democracy is slowly dying each time, you know, someone is arrested, threatened, harassed. New laws are put in place to repress freedom of the press. And when she was arrested for cyber libel, she said that this is not just about me or about Rappler. The message the government is sending is very clear. Be silent. And I'm saying and appealing to you to not be silent, even if and especially if you are next. And she said that she would face the charges thrown against her. And this is what I found really, really inspiring. And she also talks about it in the film A Thousand Cuts, which is about her and press freedom in the Philippines. So when asked about the charges, she said she will face them. And she said, we will not duck. We will not hide. We will hold the line.
Hmm.
So for journalists in Malaysia, you know, the work you do is important. It makes a difference in the world, in between life and death, between justice and injustice. Facts matter and truth matters. So to all of us, I hope that, like Maria Ressa, we will hold the line.
Absolutely fantastic. I think that quote, you know, by Maria Ressa actually gave me goosebumps. On that note, Joanne, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dasha.
That was Ding Joanne. She's an advisor at the Center for Independent Journalism. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashrin Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.